Well, today is our last day to talk about one another's. And today is the subject of blessing one another. Now, the word blessing is a word we bounce around. We just sang it, bless the Lord, O my soul. And we sing it all the time. And blessing goes multiple directions. God has blessed us. We sing and bless him, and we do other things to bless him. We are to bless others. Others bless us. What does all this mean? Well, today I'm going to spend most of my time at this level because we're in the one another's. What are we to do with one another? That's other people, believers and unbelievers. We're going to look at this. But I'd like to trace this theme through the Bible very quickly, if I could, just so you go, is this a theme throughout the Bible? The answer is yes. Think about it, and you don't need to look these up. I'm just going to give them very quickly five verses or five things that occur throughout the Bible, three in the Old Testament, two in the New Testament, that get us thinking about this. And then we're going to look at some scriptures and then give some practical applications. So first of all, one of my favorite chapters, all these are actually favorites, Genesis chapter 12, where God says to Abram at the time, I am going to bless you. And at the end of that conversation in Genesis 12, verses 1 through 6, he says, you will be a blessing to the nations. You and your descendants will be a blessing to the nations. That's a very specific blessing to a very specific person and his lineage, the Jewish people, the Hebrews. But there is a theme that comes throughout it that God blesses us so that we can bless others. Now, in Numbers chapter 6, write that down, and we're going to come back to that verse a little later. There's a prayer that Aaron and Moses give to the people, and they actually are teaching them to pray this prayer to their families and others' people, and that is, may the Lord bless you. See, we love to pray, may the Lord bless me. Our prayers in the 21st century as Christians tend to be, may the Lord bless me and mine, isn't it? Don't you pray that way? Lord bless me. You may not use the word bless, but you, Lord, can you do this for me? Can you do that for my children? Can you do that for my parents? Can you do that for my spouse? But this is, may the Lord bless you and keep you. And turn his face upon you, and may his countenance be on you and give you peace. It's a great thing. We're going to come back to that one. So even in Moses' time, there's this concept that we move towards asking God to bless other people, not just God to bless me and mine, but to bless other people. Then there's a great verse, and write this down, Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 7. And in Jeremiah 29, it's the children of Israel are now in exile. Jeremiah's writing it, so it's another whole period. It's about 1,000 years after Moses, long time later, and the people are there. And this is what Jeremiah, God says to Jeremiah, and he says, Jeremiah, you tell the people, look out for the welfare of the city, the community, because in its welfare is your welfare. What he is saying is that stop just blessing yourself, start blessing others because your welfare is in their welfare. It's an incredible understanding that it is not just that God gives us so that we can have our own things. Then you go into the New Testament, and what does Jesus say? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, which comes out of the Deuteronomic, out of the Torah, out of the first five books of the Bible. That's the first law. The first commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul. But a second is like it. What is it? Love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. So what he's saying is it's not just enough to have this going back and forth, which is very, very important, but there also is this. I am to love my neighbor. And then he describes who the neighbor is, and I've preached on this many times. The neighbor is not your next door family member. The neighbor could even be someone who is a foreigner, someone you don't even like, someone you don't even know. You are to bless other people. It is a concept. Then in the epistles, which is the balance of the New Testament after the Gospels, Acts, the epistles, they go into very specific ways of doing it. And that's what we've been talking about, the one another's, haven't we? Love one another, bear one another's burdens, believe in one another, serve one another, be devoted to one another. I did about 10 or 12 of these. There's almost 40 of these one another's that we are to do one to the other. But today, what I want to do is talk about how do we bless one another. So turn to Numbers chapter 6. Numbers chapter 6, verse 24. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. Fourth book of the Bible. Probably in pages that haven't been turned too often. Open them up, go like this. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, verse 22, speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, thus you shall bless the people of Israel. So God's telling Aaron and all the priests and all the Levites and others to say, okay, you go bless the people. You shall say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. I just want to stop there because I talk and preach a lot about turning your face and the Lord turning his face. But what does it mean to bless and to keep? I want you to write those words down. Bless, keep. Blessing, and going into the New Testament even, is speaking a word of good. It's speaking a word of good. It's projecting, if I can use that word, not in a new age way, but in a good way. It's projecting good on someone else. If I bless you, I want good to happen to you. If I curse you, I want bad to happen to you. We know that, right? Blessing is good. And we know this. And we're going to come to some application of that. What does the word kind mean? Excuse me, not kind, keep. The Lord bless you and keep you. This is a word that we don't understand too well, and I want you to think about it. You know, I love history. I love going to castles. Anybody gone to an old castle somewhere in the world? It doesn't just have to be in England. It can be anywhere in the world. Well, in a castle, if it's still, a lot of the buildings are still there. There's a middle building inside the walls of a castle. Does anybody know what it's called? The keep. The keep. K-E-E-P. The keep. It's amazing. Why would a building be called the keep? In the Tower of London, which is right in the center part of London, it's called the White Tower, is the keep. That's where, and they keep things there. There were two things that the keep was for. Number one, it was for upkeep. That means that's where all the supplies were held. The upkeep for having all the things to supply the people that are possibly being besieged by some other army. All the upkeep was in there. But also, if the walls were ever breached, broken, taken over, they could hide in it, and it was a safe keep. It was for safe keeping. What's interesting is, in the other keep in the Tower of London, is where the crown jewels are. They are kept in a keep. Wow, that's good. For safe keeping. Now, what's interesting is, the person in charge of the crown jewels in the keep is called a keeper. Wow, that Bill, you're good. It's a keeper. Here's what we usually think as keep. Possessing. See, if I keep everything I have, I am possessing it, and I'm not going to give it to you. I'm keeping it. But that is not what the word originally meant. The word meant if you were keeping something, you were keeping it for someone else. The keeper was in charge of the crown jewels. The keeper was in charge of all the supplies. The keeper was in charge of the safe house. He or she was not the one who owned it all. They were given those things so they could be distributed to other people at the appropriate time, or in the case of the crown jewels, kept for the coronations and all the rest when the queen or king would come in and take them and then bring them back. You see, God gives us things to keep, not to keep as in hold, possession, but to keep because he's given us, which is the other definition, responsibility for it. So we're keepers of the blessings God has given us, not to possess them, but to be responsible for them. And the responsibility of us as keepers of God's blessing is to bless other people. Not to possess it like this, but to be responsible and give it to other people. That is the purpose of it. Now, I want to try something here to get us thinking about this. So I'm going to do something I've never done before. So if this is your first time, this is the first time I've ever done this. I want one person who's a preteen to come up here. I won't embarrass you. I want a teenager to come up. I want a 20-year-old, someone in the 20s, someone in the 30s, someone in the 40s, someone in their 50s, someone in their 60s, someone in their 70s, someone in their 80s, if you're willing to. And David, I want you to come up here and help anybody who needs help to walk up here. So come right up. Someone who's less than 13, come forward. Someone who's in their teen, just come on up. Come up quickly. There we go. Come on up. Okay, Brody's up here. Okay, so come on up. I got a teenager. I need a 20-year-old. Come up. I need a 30-year-old. Come. Just come on up. 40-year-olds, come up. Come right here. Brody, you start at this. We're going to start younger and work our way. So come on up. 50-year-olds, come on. 60-year-old, come on. Good. 70s, 70s. Just come here. Come this way. Brody is the first one right there. Everybody's got to come here. Come over here, ladies. Over here. Ladies, it doesn't matter. Just come right here. Come right here, right here, right here. Okay, right here. Keep coming. Do I have a... You're 60s. Dick, how old are you? 70s. All right. Any 80-year-old want to come in? Caden, where are you going, bro? We got two. Come on. We want two. Herman, come on up here. How old are you, Herman? 88. Okay. David, help him up. Help this guy up. Okay. So come in, come in, come in. Just keep coming, come over so these guys, all right, good to have you. Herman, come on up here. Come all the, you know what, Herman, stay with Brody right there. We're going to leave you right there. What comes around goes around, right? I have a bucket in my hand. I have a bucket, nothing in it, it's not heavy. Years ago, John Lucas, myself, you saw John on the, we go all over the world. In Haiti, they have a thing called a bucket line. They don't have wheelbarrows. They don't have cement trucks. They don't have the pressurecrete pipes to build buildings with. The way they build buildings in a lot of rural Haiti is they mix the mud, the cement, in the dirt. And then they put it in one of these 5-gallon or 50-pound holding things. They put it in here. And then they hand it to a guy. I'm going to hand it to you, Herm. They hand it to him, and then his job is one thing, is to hand it to the next person, hand it to him. And their job is to move it along, keep handing it along, all the way till it gets to where it needs to be poured out. But there's a problem with this. There's a huge problem in that it dries out before it gets from there to there. So there are people in between that have other buckets behind them of water. And they take that bucket and they hold this bucket filled with cement and they take some water and put it in. And they get their hand down there and they start moving it around and then they pass it to the next one. And then the next one looks to see if it's in good shape, and if it is, passes it to the next one. If it begins to dry out, they get a little more water in there, get it mixing up. You know what? Their hands get dirty. They get mud, and you know, they call cement mud. They get mud all up here, and they work their way until it gets to the person that is going to form the column or the wall or the floor or whatever it may be. You see, each one of us is in the bucket line. Every one of us is in a bucket line to help people. And I don't know when the person comes to you, young guy like Brody, older gentleman like Herman, everybody in between, what their condition is. And you don't either unless you look in the bucket and you take some time and you get that hand in there and start mixing it up with them and realizing it, is it ready? Are they ready, or is it ready to move on to the next person? You and I have been called to stand in a bucket line. People always go, "Boy, Pastor Bill, you do such good things." I go, "I'm just in the bucket line. There was someone praying for this person. There was someone who built into this person. There was someone who's done something else." I can't even name how many people that have been in my bucket line. There are people that have been in my bucket line that I've never even met because we have prayer. You can pray for people without even touching the bucket. That is such a beautiful thing. And we can help if you choose to keep the way God has defined keeping. And that is to not possess, but to give away. To be responsible for the things God has allowed us to keep, so that we can then enter into people's lives and move them forward to Christ-likeness. And you don't have to be 88 years old, and how old are you? 85 years old, and Dick, how old are you? 70. Oh, you're our 70-year-old, 76. You don't have to be that old to become Christ-like. You can begin coming Christ-like much younger and much older as well. And each of you need to be in a bucket line, because people come in your life, and what happens if you move out and you move out? Now, this guy has a double, triple responsibility because they're not this close. You know, they're moving the buckets along. They're not this close to each other. So he has double, triple the responsibility because some people are just not doing their job. And I believe that if you do your job as the keeper of God's blessings that he's given you, it is incredible. That is what it means to bless one another. Thank you. Let's thank all these people. Thank you for being here. Come on down. Thanks, man. Good. Help him down. We help him down. There you go. Thanks, Herman. All right. So, can I give you five ways to bless somebody? To put water in the bucket. These are only five. That you can think of hundreds of ways of doing this. But can I give you five to do? Five to think about? I didn't make these up. I didn't think these up. I've been given them in a bucket. There's a great little book called The Blessing by John Trent and Gary Smalley. If you've never read it, it's a great book, and they speak of a lot of things in it. They give these five. Number one is this: a meaningful touch. A meaningful touch. Now, you go, "Bill, this is not the easy one," because everything that can be done well can also be perverted. The power of touch can be perverted. We know that. We have children here in this room, so we're not going to talk about the perversion of touch. You know what that is. Some of you have experienced the perversion of touch, but there is a meaningful sense of touch. When we get into the Gospel of John, you're going to see Jesus saying, "Bring them to me," and he touches them in a meaningful way. Now, here in America, there's two very simple ways to touch people. One is a handshake. One is this kind of touch. I'm not talking about total embrace or kissing or whatever. You have to determine what is meaningful depending on who the relationship is. If it's your spouse, that meaningful touch is different than if it's a child versus if it's someone who is just an acquaintance or you don't know. But touch is very powerful. And don't, because it's been so warped and misused, don't negate it as a very powerful tool. I have worked and been in many leprosy colonies. Leprosy colonies are places where people lose their fingers and toes and much more. Some of the people in this room have worked in them and been doctors in them and know far more than me, but they have lost their ability to touch. And when they lose their ability to touch, they have lost an incredible thing. The second part of this is your eyes. You can touch people with your eyes. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he turn his face towards you. When you turn your face towards someone with your eyes, that is, you are giving them your attention, you are blessing them. And let me encourage you, in a very distracted world that we live in, very distracted, isn't it? You didn't like that quiet thing I just did, because you've got to have noise at all times. We've got to have movement at all times. You just want to pull out that thing and see when the next, you got that little machine in your pocket and you're just excited about getting it out in a moment. We just can't, but turn your face towards someone and bless them with your attention. When Jesus stopped, and when we read the Gospel of John, what you're going to notice in the early parts of the Gospel of John is the individual interactions Jesus had with people. John chapter 2, with the wedding and the turning the water into wine, you'll see Jesus. John chapter 1, when he's inviting the disciples to come follow him. John chapter 3, with the interaction of Nicodemus. John chapter 4, with the interaction of the woman at the well. There is this incredible attention because he has turned his face towards them. And there's incredible opportunity to share Christ. Number two, and this is so important, a spoken message. You need to speak blessings to people. You need to speak to them. Now, let me ask a question, and this is, don't look around, but how many of you are sarcastic? You love sarcasm. Okay, I'm raising my hand too. Wow, some people are raising their feet and two hands over here. Sarcasm is a spoken message, but it tears people down. Now, I'm not judging you. I'm a co-belligerent in this. We need to realize a spoken message sarcastically is tearing people down. What's that little children's thing? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Is not true. Somebody hits you with a stick, you'll heal. Somebody hits you with a bad word, and it lasts forever, doesn't it? Doesn't it? 10 people say something good to you, and one says something bad. What do you remember? The one. You need to be a person who speaks blessings. God has given you his word. In fact, John chapter 1, verse 1, in the beginning was the word. God chooses to use the word to describe Jesus Christ. That's how important the message of God is to us. He uses the actual word. It's Logos. We'll talk about it in a week or two, about that word. That word really is also, interestingly enough, tied into eulogy, which is giving a blessing to someone, eul logos, the word, giving a blessing of the word to someone else. Are you an encourager? Are you a person that looks somebody in the face and encourages them both with words of affirmation, but also words of Jesus Christ? If you don't know what to say or what to text or what to email, start in the book of Psalms and just take a psalm and give a verse and bless somebody with that verse. My wife is incredible at this. She knows if I'm having a bad day, even when I'm having a good day, she'll give a verse. And if it's out of Psalm, she's just giving a blessing to me that God blessed her with and passing it on. You don't have to create huge words. Use God's words if you don't know what to use, and that's the best place to begin. Number three, attach high value to the person. Do you realize that this person, I use the bucket line, they're not a bunch of mud. They are a person made in the image of God. And we need to attach high value to them. That's different than the world does. The world says we're just a part of the cycle of life and this and that, and we come and we go, and we just came out of the flowers and we return to the flowers. That's not what God says. God says we were made in His image, and you need to attach a high value to people. So say serious words to people. Do serious things for people. Number four. This is key. Picture a special future for someone. I love doing this. This is one of my favorite things. When I see someone that is younger, and I don't mean necessarily a kid, but younger in the faith or whatever, I love talking to them about their future and helping them see what that God has a plan for their life. Those of you that are in middle age, anyone can do this, by the way. You don't have to be my age. But just to encourage people to see their future as God has for them. I'm not talking about discerning what they're going to be necessarily, my son, the lawyer, my daughter, the doctor. I mean, you can do that. But I'm talking about helping them see that God has an incredible plan for their life. And you have the opportunity to do it. Don't just think it's the paid pastors that do it. It's not just Glenn who does it for the youth, and Cameron does it for the young adults, and the others do it for the older adults. No, we all have that incredible responsibility and opportunity. And then finally, fifth, make an active commitment to be in their life. If you're going to bless somebody, you got to make an active commitment. Now, some of blessings are just short, and you only are with them for a day or two. Others you're with for longer periods of time. Other are your family members that you have to have a longer relationship with. It's a great opportunity to do that. I've shared this story, and I want to share it again because it's been a while, and I love stories, and I love this one. I had a friend who was from the islands of the Caribbean, one of the more southern islands, St. Kitts. And he came to America. I was in high school. He was in college. We became great friends. He went off to college, and then I went to the same college he went. But he was a senior when I was a freshman. We were good friends. He was a little older than I was, and we're friends to this day, years later. And one day, years after we got out of college, he graduated before me, and he's doing great, and great family. He came to me, and we were having lunch or coffee or something. He goes, Bill, I just want you to know your dad put me through college. I said, what? He said, your dad put me through college. I said, I would know if my dad put you through college. He goes, he did. So I went to my dad. I said, Dad, did you put, and I named him. I said, did you put him through college? He goes, your buddy? No, I didn't put him through college. And because he'd been over the house many times, Dad knew him very well. And he goes, I didn't put him through college. And so next time I saw my friend, I said, my dad said he didn't put you through college. He goes, oh, let me tell you the story. He goes, you know, I'd come up from St. Kitts. I didn't have a lot of money. I was working my way through college. Back then, you could pay monthly to get through college. Nowadays, I think they want it all every semester. But you could pay your way monthly. He was out of money. And my dad sent him $500. $500. And he said, that took me over the top. He goes, I was able to make my monthly. I could then get some money, and I was able to finish college. He goes, if it wasn't for that $500, I would have had to quit college. Your dad put me through college. See, that's the water into the bucket. So I went back to my dad. I said, Dad, did you give Arnie $500? He goes, oh, yeah, I think I did. I go, tell me about it. I mean, it's like 10 years later. He goes, you know, I was praying for him one day, and God prompted me to just send him a check. Now think about it. It's not a lot of money. But it put him through college. Because my dad who was a keeper of some money, heard from the Lord, and instead of possessing the money, was responsible with the money and gave it to Arnie. And he was able to finish college. Now, my dad was just one of the bucket holders in the long line of bucket holders for this guy's life. But you know what? If he hadn't done it, God would have gotten him through some other way, but my dad would not have been a part of taking that bucket to the next stage. I don't know what God is calling you to do. It's not about money. That's just one example. But you need to take an active part in people's life. Not in everybody's life, because then you won't do a thing, but in some people's life. At the end of this subject of one anothering, we can talk about being devoted and loving and believing one another and all these great things, trusting one another, but if we don't take what God has given us and be responsible with it to help others, what good is it? Cement on the ground outside of the construction project is worthless. And all of us have been in places where you see cement that is dried and has no purpose, and you trip over it. You go, what is this doing here? It's someone didn't pick it up and use it in the bucket and get it to the place it needed to go. And God is calling you and me to do that for other people. Amen? So the question is, are you going to do it? So this is application time. This isn't just, oh, Bill, I agree with you. Great job. This is, yes, I am going to become a true keeper of what God has given me. By the definition of what keep really means, not to possess, but to be responsible for it and give it out. Let's give out prayer, give out your belief, give out the scriptures, give out whatever it may be, your time, treasure, talent, the truth, whatever it is.